Good morning. Good morning to those who are laden. Laden with all responsibility. Laden with a weary spirit. Laden with a dark perspective. Laden by visions. Good morning. Grab your ladle, you laden person. We're gonna ladle on that special gravy. We're going to join the Navy. We're going to go save Davy. You're out there, Davy. We're gonna save you. Because it is Friday. And can you believe it? It's Friday? It's really kind of cool that it's Friday. That's right, baby. It's Friday, January the 17th, 2025. January the 17th, 2025. We made it, folks. Technically, Boblimp Doc should soon be over, and I kind of hope. I don't know. We made it, folks. We're here. It's right around 5:30 a.m. Maybe you're awake, maybe you're not. If you're here on the Olympic Peninsula and you hear my voice, you're in some type of brain cloud. There's cloudy weather. There's a windswept world. There's the dark grayness of Port Angeles in winter. But actually, we had a little bit of sun yesterday, a couple days this week. A little bit. If you know, you know. I don't want to go into details because it's a depressing topic, but if you keep up with Dane Wigington, you know as well as I do that, you know, these clear skies aren't really as clear as they used to be. But we had a little bit of the quote-unquote clear skies this week, and it was nice. And, you know, this time of year, this particular latitude, the days are short, and the night holds on to you too long and revisits you too early. In fact, you could say that when you live in a place like this, the darkness chases you all winter long. Chases you down to the wharf where you and Betty made love and made a bunctus baby. Chases you out to that spot where you dumped the body someplace near Orcas Island. Chases you out into the mountains and the forests and the fields and the various places. It's all outer spaces. Did you know that you're an astronaut? Did you know that I'm an astronaut? We are on a spaceship called Earth, traveling through space at tens of thousands of miles per hour, in close contact with our sun, orbiting it, our fellow traveler. There are asteroids and cosmic, all kinds of cosmic wind bullshit. There are comets that sometimes visit us. Wow, that's an icy friend. The first topic for today, and it may end up being the main topic, is a compare and contrast. You remember when you were in school and the English teacher would say compare and contrast? Well, we're going to do a little compare and contrast. I'm going to read two articles. The first one is from Forbes. The second one is from Al Jazeera. Oh my God, if you're reading from Al Jazeera, whatever. It's all garbage, folks. But I'm going to read these stories. Not because I'm going to tell you any of this is true. I can't really verify much of this, but because whatever the level of truth is between these two stories, it is a worthy compare and contrast. The first story comes from Forbes magazine, or I should say Forbes.com, right? Forbes Online. And, wow. Thank you for pop-up adding. Headline, LA fires, colon. These celebrities, Barbara Corcoran, Eugene Levy, and more, had homes destroyed along with historic landmarks. This was written by Ty Roush of the Forbes staff and also Mary Whitfield Rolfs of Forbes staff, and published on January the 14th, 2025, BoBlimpDoc. Top line, thousands of structures have been leveled by the wildfires, firestorms, that continue to burn across Los Angeles County, affecting the homes of several celebrities in the Pacific Palisades, where the average home lists for more than $3 million, and damaging prominent local landmarks. Key facts, Palisades Charter High School, featured in Teen Wolf. It was damaged by the fire. Several structures at the Will Rogers State Historic Park, I'm going to summarize a bit of this for you, my friends, was damaged by the fire. Topanga Ranch Motel, a bungalow, you know, that William Randolph Hearst, whatever, it was damaged. Theater Palisades was damaged or destroyed or something, serious damage. Pasadena Jewish Temple and Center, buildings were lost to the fire. Getty Center, you know, perched atop a hill, blah, blah, blah. It remains protected. Getty Villa, you know, museum burned, blah, blah, Bunny Museum, blah, blah, blah. Altadena Golf Course, you know, I don't even want to read all these places. Here are the lists of, like, people who are important people. Comedian Pete Lee said he learned his home had burned down. Daughter of Ryan O'Neill, Tatum O'Neill, said the Malibu home he once shared burned in the fires. He shared with Farrah Fawcett. Joshua Jackson said he and his daughter made it out safely, though his beautiful home did not survive. Kobe Smulders and Taryn Killam, their home was destroyed in the fire. John C. Riley's home was destroyed in the fire. I'm going to stop here. There are a lot of people, including Mel Gibson, Jeff Bridges, Rosie O'Donnell, Adam Brody, Paris Hilton, Billy Crystal, Diane Warren, actor Carrie Ulz, just a lot of people. A lot of these famous people and their homes were damaged or destroyed. John Goodman's, you know, home was reduced to a pile of rubble. Yeah. So I'm going to let you read the whole story. The point is, this particular Forbes story is a list of damages from the LA fires so far. Okay. So you can read the details, but you get the message. There, you know, a lot of expensive, nice things were destroyed. I don't know that the death toll so far has gone up. Yesterday, they said it was 25 or something. Maybe it's 50 today. As I said yesterday, it seems unlikely that the death toll could be that low, but we'll see. This next article, as stated, comes from Al Jazeera. And again, I may or may not read all the details with this either because it's just too depressing. It comes from Al Jazeera. It was published on October the 8th, 2024. Headline, 1 year of Israel's war on Gaza. It has been 1 year since Israel began its genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. Israel's assault on Gaza began on October 7th in response to an attack by armed fighters from the Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, and other Palestinian groups. Some 1,140 people died during the attack, and about 240 were taken into Gaza as captives. In response, Israel began a vicious bombing campaign and tightened what was already a crushing siege that Gaza has been under since the year 2007. Over the past year, Israeli attacks have killed at least 41,615 Palestinians living in Gaza. Brothers and sisters, I would venture to say the number is bigger than that. but we'll see. Equal to one out of every 55 people living there. Huh, that's kind of severe. At least 16,756 children have been killed, the highest number of children recorded in a single year of conflict over the past two decades. More than 17,000 children have lost one or both parents. At least 97,303 people are injured in Gaza. Nearly 22,500 have life-altering injuries. You know, like losing an arm, like losing a leg, like an eye pops out because, you know, the concussive force from a 2,000-pound bomb, if you're about 50 to 100 meters away, yeah, you might survive the explosive force itself, but your brain is going to bounce around inside your skull, and your eye might get popped out from the pressure. According to the UNRWA, every day 10 children lose one or both legs in Gaza. 10,000 people are buried under rubble right now in Gaza. 75,000 tons of TNT. Again, I think this number is too low. I've heard numbers between 75,000 and 100,000. But the key point is this, and I bring this up because folks have to have this sink in, and these stories are kind of connected. During the raid on Dresden, strategic forces in Europe dropped about 5,000 tons of TNT. And historians of World War II, many will tell you that that was probably a war crime. In about a year, what is that, 20 times almost? And what is that? It's not just that the number itself is absurd. It's that it's almost like you're beyond evil. Like, there's evil. Believe me, Bomber Harris in Europe, General LeMay with the Japanese, believe me, in military and warfare, there are evil people who don't care. You know, Nagasaki and Hiroshima get the press because it just took one bomb to do the job. But in reality, the B-29 firebomb raids on Tokyo and other cities in Japan, they were quite terrible and quite conventional. And the B-29 specifically was not designed for precision bombing. It was designed to keep people safe at a very high altitude so that you could just drop bombs all the live long day. And there was zero likelihood, almost zero likelihood, that a Japanese fighter could take you out. That's the B-29. That's the Stratofortress. That's the fully pressurized high-altitude bomber of World War II. It was never intended to be precise. But it was intended to be a truck. A conventional, you know, over-the-road, big old truck for the sky to truck a lot of explosive to drop on people. But like I said, brothers and sisters, the worst raids of World War II don't even compare to what was done in Gaza in the past year plus. And the question people should be asking, the question not enough people are asking, is why? It doesn't make sense. That I'm stopping here for a second because, as I've stated before, the slow roll ethnic cleansing, which is what the state of Israel's been doing from the beginning, it's been working. I'm not defending evil here. It's simply the fact that their strategy up until October of 2023 was working. It would have taken them another 10 or 20 years, but they would have gotten there. This is not defense of the morality of it. What they're doing is evil. Their government is evil. But what they were doing was working according to their plan. And then something happened in 2023, probably the summer of 2023. Probably some dude from Langley had a conversation with some dude from Mossad and say, "Hey, buddy, I'm going to show you the briefcase. You know the one that L. Ron Hubbard only shows the big spenders? I'm going to show you the briefcase that contains the glowing thing from Pulp Fiction." And that guy from Langley opens up the briefcase someplace in Tel Aviv, and his Mossad co-partner, probably partners, life partners, he takes a look at what's inside the fucking briefcase. And then he goes to the government. He goes to the people at the top and says, listen, that 10 or 20 year schedule ain't going to work. And we're basically, if we don't take care of business in about a year, we're never going to be able to take care of business. Now, the bad news, brothers and sisters, is that that interpretation, even if true, doesn't tell us why. It doesn't tell us why, but it does give us a timeline, doesn't it? $75,000. Even if you go with the low end, I think it's $100,000, but let's say it's $75,000. That's madness. That's insane. Crazy people do things like this. It's not simply that it's evil. The only way that this makes sense is that somebody told them that if you don't take care of it now, you're never going to get a second chance. Thirty-four hospitals rendered inoperative in Gaza. 80 health centers rendered inoperative in Gaza. 131 ambulances targeted deliberately and destroyed by Israeli forces in Gaza. 162 health institutions targeted by the IDF in Gaza. Israeli attacks on hospitals and the continual bombardment of Gaza have killed at least 986 medical workers, 165 doctors, 260 nurses, 184 health associates, 76 pharmacists, and 300 management and support staff. It's insane. There have been 520 bodies recovered from 7 mass graves created by Israeli forces inside hospitals. 75% of Gaza's population have been infected with contagious diseases. I'm not going to read all these numbers. 96% of the people in Gaza are basically on the verge of starvation. Okay, there you go. Now, think about how we started this conversation. I said, we're going to do a compare and contrast. And this really isn't about literature or text or sentences. It's more about the numbers and also the impression. I cannot verify very much about what's been going on in Gaza. I have tried to go to whatever sources are out there that are useful, but they tend to repeat themselves. And a lot of journalism, and it's been like this for a while, for at least 10, 15 years, a lot of journalism is auto-generated AI crap. So if you want to go find it and, you know, say who came up with the story, maybe nobody, right? Maybe nobody. Maybe it's just a manufactured thing in a Silicon reality. But here's the deal. It concerns me that we are not able to do for the people of Appalachia what we should have been able to do. It concerned me back in 2005 that we weren't able to help out the people of New Orleans more effectively. It really concerned me during Fukushima that the world seemed so weak and impotent to deal with something that was actually way more serious than most people still want to admit. And it is concerning that these LA fires got out of control. Some people will say it was done on purpose. Some people will say it's the result of nature and it's random. Some people will say people made bad decisions. You know, who wants to build in a desert? And here's another thing too. You ever see the movie Chinatown? I don't like the sequel. The sequel to Chinatown was fucking stupid. But the original movie Chinatown, I'm not going to give you the plot, but if you're somebody who lived in LA and no longer lives there, and you've never seen the movie Chinatown, you should. Because there may be a lot of truth in that movie too. The simple fact is, if you build on sand, it's entirely probable that your world will crumble. And that's it. It doesn't matter if your home is made of the best material possible. If it is built upon a shoddy foundation, it will simply fall apart. And when you think about modernity, and you think about how we occupy these spaces. And Los Angeles is not the worst example. frankly, Las Vegas is worse. The only thing is, there's not a lot of fuel or trees or brush there to burn. There's people, but not the other material. So you're not going to have a firestorm in Las Vegas, probably. Not unless it's done the way they did at Dresden. If you know, you know. But in terms of catastrophe, I think Las Vegas is potentially a way worse place to be than Los Angeles. And it's hard to say when that day comes. It's like a blue ocean event, if you know, you know. On some particular day, it will happen. And when it happens, it could be really serious. Las Vegas is not tenable. But with modernity, we can live wherever we want to. And that's still the message. Donald Trump has a prophet in his administration. His name is Elon Musk. And Elon Musk, he preaches the prophecy of Mars and spaceships and living on the moon. He does. He preaches the story. I'm not saying you should believe it. I'm not saying I believe it. But it is a message of modernity. We can live wherever we want to. If we want to live at the bottom of the ocean, we can. If we want to live on the moon one day, right? Someday we will, right? Okay, can. If we want to live in deep space and travel to other universes, we can, because we can do everything. And then you look at Los Angeles and you look at other situations and you ask yourself, is that really true? Because whatever your belief is about modernity, either it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do, or it was never able to keep going. That's a little bit of a Spooner ripoff. But the point is, it's not what people think it is. It really isn't. Nothing is guaranteed. If you read Thucydides and his history of the Peloponnesian War, he spends a fair amount of time talking about the greatness of Greece. And in some ways, there's a voice there that would be reminiscent of the voices of the early 20th century. The voice of, it's never been this good. We've never been so smart. We've never been so powerful. You can find these words, and there are words that are lost, that say the same thing, going back at least 7,000 to 8,000 years. You name the civilization, you name the people, you name the government. There were people that said it will never get better. Our empire will last forever. We'll be the 1,000-year Reich. You know, it's funny. 8 years ago, when I got into the keyboarding to prove how dumb I am, in part it was because I wanted to do some podcasts about a certain topic, and YouTube was already doing its little banning stuff with me. I think I had 33 followers. Why they were doing that, I have no clue. Anyways, about 8 years ago, I read an article about Argentina wanting to float a 50-year bond. And a lot of people, they would see that and they say, oh, I don't know, that's no big deal. For those of us who understand a little bit of history, and specifically a little bit of history of Argentina, you have to be the most miraculous optimist in the history of the world to believe that buying a 50-year Argentinian bond is a good idea. But it is kind of a red flag, because with a 50-year bond, you're telling everybody, chances are there ain't gonna be nobody looking for their money, buddy. Sorry. We got to see the fucking briefcase. The one John Travolta had. The one L. Ron Hubbard had. We saw the glowing truth. We went to the phone booth. We phoned a friend and said, pal, launch time 5 minutes. Go back to the diner and tell your friends about it. Year Argentinian bond. And this is not about the people, it's about the government. You can, you know, people are kind of the same in a lot of ways everywhere. It's their governments that do most of the harm. And in this case, you have to have 50 years of faith and trust and goodwill with the government of Argentina. The only scenario where floating a bond like that makes sense is if you know from the magical briefcase that 50 years from now it won't fucking matter. It is horrible if it's true, what's happened in Gaza. It's horrible. It's monstrous. And it's probably 10 times worse than what we know. And you can say, well, Dan, it was because those evil Hamas and their paragliders. You can tell me the whole story. But even the Israelis will point to the fact that it's a lopsided victory. Maybe Hamas killed a couple thousand Israelis, maybe. It looks like the Israelis have killed probably closer to 50,000, not the 41. And the injured, the damaged, the destroyed, the soon to die, that number's going to be bigger. And it looks like they leveled an area to build on. And that's the best interpretation, that they are rapidly expanding the state of Israel. And the only thing you're left is basically, you know, Dan, why? Why? I think it is sad that a lot of, you know, celebrities who live in LA lost their homes. It's sad because people build up. People do, especially, you know, if you have money, you build up a castle, you build up your treasures, you have your memories. And maybe even the memories are more important than the things. And so you have a house that's filled with awards and filled with expensive paintings and filled with all these gifts from important people. And I am not being sarcastic, believe it or not. These are things that people lose and they're gone, and no amount of money, and this is the truth, that a lot of these folks may be for the first time realizing, no amount of money is going to change what happened. No amount of money. I mean, I don't know. If you're Bill Gates, then maybe you have a quantum recorder so you can record a certain space and then play it back by, you know, utilizing some type of synthetic matter, and you can recreate everything because you recorded it down to the quantum scale, every atom, every molecule. I don't think Bill Gates can do that. So it's gone. Entropy, the arrow goes one direction, and all of those things are gone. So it is a big deal. But here's another important fact. Whereas the LA firestorms involved a lot of choices by a lot of people, a little bit of nature, probably corruption, there's also a lot of chance there. There's a lot of probability. And I don't think anybody would say at this point that, you know, they know for certain it was done on purpose. We know for certain the humanitarian disaster of Gaza was done on purpose. Even if you believe the Israeli story of October the 7th, 2023, we know that everything that happened after was done deliberately on purpose. We know that of the 75,000 tons of TNT that was dropped on Gaza, about half of it was dropped in the first 6 weeks. Yeah, 30 to 40,000 tons in a month and a half. So if you ask yourself the question, what is going on? I can't tell you, but I can tell you, you don't drop 40,000 tons of TNT on people over the course of a couple months by accident. The USS Liberty, if you know, you know, wasn't an accident. So why exactly would we call this one an accident? It's not. And this necessary aircraft, landlocked aircraft carrier, this necessary ally in the Middle East, over the years looks more and more like an anchor around our necks. And yeah, that's how I see it. Next topic. Okay, so my project X-ray Alpha, my project Alpha X-ray Flojo, my Flojo J. Marley DB17 is working. The project is working. My goal originally was attrition, and the attrition's occurring. My new goal is to pull people into the chipper. And I don't mean people. I mean, yeah, the trolldites, the trolldrites. I mean the various fake people that might be one or more group of people. Whatever's going on, I don't really care. But I have seen positive results, so it's kind of cool. You can kind of check out. A couple people are gone. You know, it's like goodbye, Paige. Man, Paige and I go back years, and I miss her. And Barati is gone too. And they both had a lot of SEO potential on the project. They could have made millions of something, but they didn't. Next topic. There was another one of these Elon Musk headlines about how SpaceX has their magical gantry that catches the rockets as they drop out of the sky, you know, in retrograde, whatever. Oh my God. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to talk about space as a whole. Okay, so I want to mention something for a couple different reasons, but I didn't want to talk about it too soon. I have a friend from Utah. He has the right to his own privacy, but I think you guys know him as Justin. And I was able to reconnect with him about a month ago. It's been a rough 3 or 4 months, especially when it comes to turds. And I don't mean Justin. I mean actual turds floating up from nowhere. And if you've listened to my podcast going back to September, you're aware that this turdish bullshit, yeah, had been building. And it kind of correlates to the increase in my number of podcasts being produced, which is interesting, but also not relevant. Justin and I may start working on the CB Digital project again, but I need to make a few things clear. Justin is technically proficient, right? And he's a great guy to work with, but I may or may not have always explained certain things about the project to him correctly, and I need to clear a few things up. There are things we can do with JSA call over CB radio, and there are things we can't do. It is low bandwidth. So if you're thinking about secure messaging with low bandwidth, and let me explain what I mean. I think our estimates were about 500 to 1,000 words every 10 minutes. And that's about what you could do. And again, if you're just sending text messages or emails, that's probably plenty. If all you need to say is, hey, Bob, I have this at this location, that's not that many words, and that message goes out fast. And the way that JSA call works is it works like an email application. It keeps track of all those messages. They're all in the system. Is it the best application ever? No. Is it completely original? No, it's based upon work, I believe, WSJTX, I think out of Princeton. So, and you know, it's used for FT8, which is another kind of digital messaging over shortwave, basically for reporting basic station information, like I am up, here's my location, Maidenhead grid, stuff like that. And people have used FT8 for little tiny messages, and it kind of works. JS8 is based on that, and it works even better, but it has its quirks. And so if you want to say, well, Dan, can I watch a movie over CB radio? Can I send pictures? Can I send music? Well, you're better off sending music in non-digital mode, if you know, with radio. But that being said, can I send a lot of digital information? The answer is no. It's not high bandwidth. It's super low bandwidth. And you have to think of it in those terms. Listen, in the late 1960s, when they turned on what we call the internet for the first time, you know, DARPANET, they were excited that they had reached 56K. That's, you know, 56, what, kilobytes per second? Yeah, or, you know, 56K. Today, people are talking about, you know, petabyte networks, networks that will go so fast that it's just not even reasonable to even think in terms of speed, but really fast with very, very high bandwidth. It's not the same world. But JS8 is more primitive than that, you know, internet of the late 1960s in terms of bandwidth. So you're not going to send a lot of data. And again, I just need to be clear on that, because there are things you can do and there are things you can't do. You can employ encoding strategies, and those can work, which means chunking, which means instead of, you know, let's say you have a subphrase, into the repeats itself, or in the, you can take subphrases, you can take a lot of common words, and you can encode them. And a great way to encode them is to, in fact, use the alphabet, because you could use the alphabet in 3 character positions, and with those 3 character positions, you can encode a lot of repeated structures. You bracket those little codes, and all of a sudden, you don't need to send all of the data that you would normally have to send, because the lookup code gives you the subphrase. That's one strategy you can use with low bandwidth, but there are even better strategies. You can't really use compression, and let me explain why. Compression works at a big scale, statistically speaking, because you can build a lookup table for a common repeating strings or characters. And that lookup table allows you to substitute another value. And that's not the whole story of compression, but that's kind of how it works. You look for long repeating structures, you encode them to an ID, you replace them with the ID, but you still have to keep track of the long repeating structure. We're talking about JSA call. If you compress a message in JSA call and then send the compressed result, and again, JSA call is a limited character set, so I really don't think that's going to work for that reason as well, you will end up with a bloated message. Your message will be bigger. So no, compression strategies don't really work with JSA call. Encoding strategies do. Chunking and stuff like that does work. If you're thinking in terms of security with JSA call, there's book ciphers. Book ciphers are just so simple and so easy, but it does require that you and the receiver have the same book. But with a book cipher, you can send a page number, a line number, a character position, and that's just a number. But by getting that number, your friend on the other side with a book cipher can look it up. And because characters repeat across multiple pages, you can randomly flip through the book and generate your cipher. And you can look up the specifics of book ciphers. I'm pretty certain there's some sad ham on YouTube who has some particular video about doing a book cipher. So you could do that with JSA call. That would work. Really complicated encryption strategies like RSA are probably not feasible for the same reason that I said, you know, what I said about compression, but they might work. You'd have to do some research. The problem with a lot of these algorithms is that they are designed generally around an unlimited character set. So even if you give it just ASCII codes, ASCII characters, you know, the first 100 and whatever characters within Unicode or whatever, you know. Even if you give it ASCII character codes, it's going to generate a result, a ciphertext, that's going to include expanded Unicode characters, mainly because if you don't do that, someone's going to crack your codes, so to speak. So you have to do it that way. And because that's how RSA works, the result, the ciphertext, you put, you know, it's not going to work. You can't just paste it into the prompt zone of the JSA call app and expect it to work. Some of those characters simply won't be sent. And that means your message won't be sent completely. Parts of it will be, parts of it won't be, you know, with unclear results, really. So, I think Justin and I are going to work on this. And again, it's really good to hear from him. And I just wanted to just be clear on what is and isn't possible. But here's the thing, and maybe I'll leave it with this as far as the topic goes. If you're creative about JSA call, there's a lot that might be possible. For example, there is one particular computer language that might be perfect for JSA call. It's called Prolog. Prolog is a very limited character set language, which means that the characters that JSA call already supports more or less matches the basic characters of Prolog, which means you can build a little program and send it over JSA call and somebody else can execute it. And yeah, you're not going to be doing it at light speed. It isn't fiber cable. But understand this, you could talk to somebody 1,000 miles away. No fiber cable, no satellite, no telephone lines. And if you got your own power off-grid, no electricity required from the utility company. And you could send them a message that could let people know, frankly speaking, during a disaster, let people know if their friends and family are alive. And that can work when everything else doesn't work. That's kind of the core message. And so I'm excited to be working with Justin again. I don't know what's going to happen. As I've said before, do not donate to my channel for purposes of supporting this because I want to keep these things separated. And, you know, it's not like I'm not getting a lot of donations right now. And I think I know why. There's two reasons. One, people are really, really strapped right now. And I understand that. And two, I'm just lucky to be special, right? Anyways, I don't really feel special, but I am excited to be working with Justin. And I did want to clarify a few things, what can be done, what can't be done. I think Prolog as a computer language plus JSA call, plus a little bit of scripting and programming. I've done a few examples. There's an example on the JSA site of doing some work with the TCP/IP interface of JSA call. Yeah, there's a lot of potential there. You know, you're not going to be writing giant programs and sending them to your friends, but you could, in fact, send data, send requests to another server, and that server could be operating with JSA call and simply responding using a Prolog instance like SWI Prolog. And because SWI Prolog is relatively, you know, straightforward, and a lot of these hams are smart enough, they'll be able to grok it out. Because of that, you could actually have some interesting radio services communities out there. Automated services on the radio. Do it smartly, okay? Don't be out there jamming people up, but it could be cool. Justin and I experimented with basically a headline service because a lot of the news is in the headlines these days. And we did that. We did a test over 11 meters where we had a Python program running. It was responding to JSA call. It was automated, which means no one was doing anything. The program just was running. It would receive a request for headlines. It could request some from Zero Hedge or the New York Times or whatever. It could request the latest, and the latest would be sent out. If you want to think in terms of topology as it applies to software engineering, in some ways, the way that JSA call works is like essentially like publisher subscriber, but it's sort of implicit. You know, every transceiver can be a publisher and every transceiver can be a subscriber. So if you're thinking about engineering with Prolog and the bigger picture dynamic, I would think in terms of publisher subscriber. But yeah, there's potential there. Not for sending movies, not for anything really evil probably. Like, well, let me rephrase that. If you're a bad person, you can use just about anything to do bad things. But in terms of the obvious bad things, you're not going to do it with JSA call. Yeah, you might send some foul language to somebody, and you might even encode it so only they would understand it. And you could do that with JSA call. Encoding is perfectly feasible and perfectly legal because it's not encryption. So maybe that's the key message. According to the sad ham, you can't encrypt anyways. I don't even want to go there right now. But it's not encryption, it's encoding. And there are lots of interesting encoding strategies that could make your stuff, if not secret, obscured. A lot of them. And they work with low bandwidth transmission. So yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of work to do. The website is not where it needs to be. I decided to move it into its own kind of compartment and to pick a new domain. What's funny is the domain I picked is one I picked about 12 years ago. Yeah, and it was one of the domains I lost when GoDaddy ripped me off. I can't get back I Am Sully. There's some folk singer sitting on it. I can't get back I Am Sully. It's very, very sad. No more IamSully.com. But I got back BoBlimpDoc. I got back DFGTC.org. And I got back stashit.com. Originally, stashit.com pointed to a sarcastic PDF. And if you go to my archives, you might be able to find it. But yeah, stashit.com. And what's really interesting is that there's two parts of this. There's HIT and there's the STA, Station HIT. I think this is inadvertently the perfect domain name for what we're working on, stashit.com. You can stash it. You can geostash it. You can geotag it. And if we do pull this off, it will be a better Reddit, a better social media, and for the vast majority, no login required. It will work like that. And And you could say to yourself, well, Dan, that's a bulletin board. And yeah, what if the planet is a bulletin board? And what if a bulletin board is what we need? But Dan, how can you can talk to people. I have chat-like conversations when people are on there all the time. Just that, you know, there's that other thing we don't talk about. Next topic. Oh boy, there was a headline yesterday on Zero Hedge. I got to read it. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, lowers expected immigration, birth rate, and population growth. Deaths are expected to exceed births within a decade. Deaths, or people dying, will exceed people being born within a decade. Folks, that is the most optimistic headline I read yesterday. I don't want to shock you, because it's not the end of the world, but people really don't understand that modernity is not guaranteed. We were never guaranteed modernity. And even if we were, look at the sides of it. Look at LA, look at Appalachia, look at Gaza, look at the full picture of modernity. But what if modernity, like every other grift, had a shelf life? And what if eventually it was going to go kaput? I think all of this happens sooner than 10 years. But we'll see, baby. Oh, next topic. You are guilty of violating our rules against evading permanent suspension. Note that if you attempt to evade permanent suspension by creating new accounts, we will suspend your new accounts. You are guilty. You are guilty. You have violated our rules against being not violated. If you attempt to evade us, you're guilty of evasion. If you attempt to survive, you're guilty of living. And we will suspend you in any form. If you become an Orbis, if you become Gromulak, your attempts to evade us will always result in more and more permanent suspension. And that builds up in your arteries and it clogs your dying heart. You're guilty. So I have my own, you know, title here, tag for something I saw on Zero Hedge yesterday. Quote unquote, I speak the truth, Pam Bondi, Pummels, yeah. I speak the when a lawyer says they're speaking the truth, you know that irony is alive. When a lawyer says they're speaking the truth, you know that irony is not dead. Hey, do you know what the meaning of is? Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles, and it's actually a pretty good one to end the podcast with. Great con artists just don't lie. They obscure the reason for the lying as well. Great grifters, great con artists, expert sociopaths, they just don't lie. They lie about the lying and why they're lying. They obscure it, the reason. So even if you detect the lie, you still have to figure out why. Yeah, great con artists. This is true, folks. It's like 2020. Eventually, a lot of people caught up with us. I'm not the only person who noticed the grift in 2020, but, you know, a lot of people didn't. And then by 2024, everybody knew what it was. If you know, you know. But then there were the reasons for it. And that's where you get this whole, they obscure the reason for the lying. So a lot of people figured out the lie, but they didn't figure out the reasons why. And the reasons why, that's maybe as important as the original lie. It's just the truth of it. The reasons why the grifters lie is their power. It's kind of like that whole Rumpel's, is it Rumpelstiltskin? Is it Rumpelstiltskin? Is he the troll? Anyways, it's like the story of the troll. If you learn the real name, you know, the real name, Mitzelflick, if you learn the real name, you have power. For the grifter, knowing why they're lying is stealing their power. They don't care if you get to a half-truth. It's kind of like, you know, about a decade ago or whatever, when supposedly the Saudi papers were published showing that maybe Saudi Arabia was behind all of 9/11. That's a limited hangout. There's a little bit of truth there, but there's a whole bunch of bullshit. They don't want you to know why they're lying. Because if you figure that out, it's not just that they lose their power. They could lose their heads in every sense that that's meaningful. It's Friday, January the 17th, 2025, Boblimp Doc. It's almost 6:30 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula. Already the cattle and the chickens and the pigs, all the animals and creatures are waking up. Farmer Ned and Farmer Mary are starting to plow the fields, to plant the corn for the crops or whatever. And we're getting ready for the weekend, right? And it's going to be football and Saturday night shows and going to that new restaurant that serves Italian-style street food. It's going to be great. If you listen to this podcast and you want to donate to it, you can. I cannot lie. I could use a little money right now. But the truth is, we all could. So that's why I don't do paywalls. I never have. And that's why I don't always do the whole beg for money thing. And if I do, I do it at the end. But if you do want to donate, listen to the following disclaimer. Take care of your food, water, shelter first. Before you donate to any podcast, including mine, make sure you got your food, water, shelter taken care of. If there are people in your life that need help right now, I mean real people, physical people, people you can actually hug if you're able to drive to their location or whatever, help them first before you give money to some random person on the internet to include me. If you're setting aside a little extra food for your family, for yourself, and you have a pet, a dog, cat, bat, rat, bird is the word. The point is, if you have a dog, and I'm just going to straight up say this, that dog could save your life. It probably has at times already. It knows. You don't need to know. If you're thinking about yourself in terms of food scarcity, think about your pet as well before you donate to my podcast. And last but not least, as crazy as things are, and I'm sorry, yeah, this is the spoiler alert, in a very non-linear way, it's going to get crazier. It's still not the end of the world. There are things right now we take for granted that might disappear for a while. A while, if we are really lucky, might only be 10 to 20 years. It could be more likely 50 to 100 if we're lucky. These things are not necessary, but these things are joyful for people. So because right now these things are still available, before you donate to my podcast, donate to yourself. Give yourself a break. The world is not ending. It never really ends. That's the joke of Fukuyama and all of his crap. History doesn't end. It goes on. Yeah, people die. Sorry. If you're older than 12 years old, you should know this by now. People die. They've always died. It's not about death. It's about how you live. So before you donate to my podcast, try to find some joy in this really crazy time. And if you've done all these things, if you're joyful, if you're fulfilled, if your cup runneth over, if you're a Texas quasi-trillionaire, gazillionaire, sitting on gold and diamonds and hookers and cocaine, you can donate as much or as little as you want to, buddy. Once again, it's Friday. It's Friday. It is January the 17th, 2025. I say these words to remind us of the date. It's weird out there, but it's the world out there. And it's probably the best of all possible ones.